Well, we heard President Obama giving a speech in Wisconsin at the top of the newscast there, and one of the digs against him in the last campaign was that he was nothing more than a celebrity, and that was an insult. Well, there's a new book out called A Short History of Celebrity, and I don't mean the last 20 minutes of celebrity. That's a blog post. No, this is a short history of celebrity, and it's 200 years. Yes, that is short. Celebrity has been celebrity for at least that long. Joining us is professor and author Fred Engels. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you say that the 18th century was the cradle of celebrity. Does that mean there were Paris Hiltons in Jamesian dress even at that time?
Well, not exactly, but I think we can see in the conduct of the famous at that time the outlines of what then becomes across a 200-250-year development, what we now recognise as celebrity. But of course we see it differently to the way in which they saw it then. But there are strong similarities.
Well, what did it mean to be famous then?
Well, fame itself is a bit of a tricky term, and I'd want to distinguish between the old word renown, which attributes fame and recognisability and so forth to certain great achievements, to fame, which is much more touched with recognisability, with being able to see people. And of course, it was in the middle of the 18th century or so that the great new city of London, the first of its type, came into being, and where you could point out the famous in the street. So that became very much part of what was going on.
And by renown, people were famous at that time for deeds, for accomplishments, for a discovery, or for a victory in battle.
Yes, well, and also they were just much more thinned out. There weren't that many people very well known. People knew, for example, who Queen Elizabeth I was in England. They didn't really know much about anybody else because the court was the centre of social reference. By the time you get to the middle of the 18th century, the city is, and that's the change.
And that also becomes the mechanism for people finding out about prominent
people. Oh, sure.
Can I give you a list, Professor Engels? Let me give you a list of names and tell me if it's celebrity or no. Napoleon, celebrity or just a famous general?
Well, you can't really separate the two. I mean, he's certainly a celebrity. He was known in the street wherever he went. He was cheered. He was acclaimed, especially by his soldiers. But, of course, he was a famous general and he was acclaimed in those ways because he'd won the battles and set up the country.
But Norman Schwarzkopf is more a celebrity than a general.
Well, I don't know. He went to war in a big way. He then might have run for president, and he's certainly a bit of both. I mean, he merits renown, if we're going to make the separation between the two terms, but he is famous, or he was. But fame fades more quickly these days than it used to.
What would Napoleon do on cable TV? Last question. Let's do actresses. Sarah Bernhardt, a celebrity in the same way as, say, Lindsay Lohan?
Well, there are strong similarities, but Sarah Bernhardt is exceptional because she is somebody of, or was somebody of, enormous achievement and talent. But she also played, she acted herself the whole time, but she did so with perfect sincerity. That's something, of course, that celebrities have to learn to do. But she did live a crazy life, as well as a rather impressive one, and she was one hell of a good actress.
Well, Fred Engels, I'm on the High Street in London in 1750 or 1760, and I pick up the local tabloid, and there's headlines about Lord Byron. What am I reading about? He was a bit of a celebrity for his time. Why?
Well, I think Byron's a very useful example. He comes a bit later. You'd be reading about him between 1810 and 1820.
Good. Okay,
but
thank you.
He really comes out with all the outlines of celebrity as we understand it. He led a tremendously dashing but also a scandalous life, and scandal, of course, is somewhere near the heart of celebrity. He was undoubtedly very gifted. He wrote straight out of the passionate aesthetics of Romanticism. He lived the life that he wrote about. And, of course, people knew that. So he had this tremendous gift for writing, this enormous facility and spontaneity, and at the same time ran the love affairs of his life, which then appeared in the verse. So he fairly brought it off with a great flourish.
Well, let's get into that on Byron for just a second. Would Byron have been as famous if his life wasn't scandalous? Or would Byron have been a celebrity at all if he stank as a poet?
Well, that's a very searching question, and I think the answer must be that he wouldn't have been as famous if he hadn't been as scandalous, because celebrity partakes of scandal out of certain human attributes, envy and spite and incredulity and and sexy daydreams, all that, he lent himself to in a way that a contemporary poet like John Keats didn't, though Keats was well enough known. But Byron is the first, really, to possess and embody and enact all those very, very juicy forms of public life.
So it seems like Paris Hilton, Professor, I'm not sure if you know who Snooki is, but she's a big celebrity here stateside, somebody who's famous for being famous. Perhaps Paris Hilton and Snooki should worship at the altar of Lord Byron. He made it all possible.
Well, yes, I think that would make perfectly good sense. No, I know certainly the figure you mean, though I know less about her than I do about Byron.
You're
but
lucky.
All the same,
you're lucky for that.
I think you've got to see her as a certain kind of talentless figure, except with a talent for self-publicity. And that's a development of the arts of celebrity, which we see accruing through the 19th and 20th century. But there were figures who paralleled that in the middle of the 19th century.
So where is it all going, Professor Ingalls? Communication is instantaneous and will remain so. Twitter's not going anywhere. Where is celebrity going? Can it get any more phosphorescent than it already is?
Well, I'm a bit uneasy about answering it quite blankly in that way, because celebrity is rather too loose a term to apply all the time to all the figures we're talking about. We need to be a bit more precise and say, well, this person's that kind of celebrity. Nelson Mandela, for example, is a certain kind of political celebrity and a very impressive one. Paul Newman was a certain kind of acting celebrity and a no less impressive one. We've also got the people who are just a kind of yellow froth on the surface of culture, and we don't really need to worry too much about those, unless you happen to be editing Heat magazine.
So so Lord Byron would not have written Child Snooki as a poem?
No, he wouldn't. But the poetry he wrote has qualities of that in it, and one can't deny that. Something racy and raffish and rushed and comic and scandalous and so forth.
Well, if you want to understand the origins of Paris Hilton and Snooki and Ashton Kutcher, go read your Byron.
Also, it's about us, too. It's a great, great read.
That's Fred Ingalls that John is mentioning, author of Short History of Celebrity. That's the book. And, Professor, we thank you for joining us from Bristol, England.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
Who we care about is sort of the story of us, Todd, don't you think?
Absolutely. It really is.
And the celebrity lifestyle, what we're interested in, your own lifestyle, what signifies your economic class? Middle, lower, upper middle, lower, upper, lower. And we're not talking about dental work. Take a look at your surroundings. Take a photo of the objects or images that most represent what class you're a part of. Could be your car, inside of your house, your block, how many Blackberries you have. Head to thetakeaway.org and upload the picture. We're creating a photo album of the American economic classes. And remember, in America, class doesn't have much to do with money. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for Celeste Headlee. It's The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.